Welcome to This Woman Can, the Women's Leadership Podcast and your source of information related to women's leadership, female entrepreneurship, personal success and career advancement. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland, Executive Coach, Leadership Development Expert and the author of This Woman Can, the No Bullshit Guide for Women Who Lead. And now, this week's episode. Everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of This Woman Can. I am your host, Janice Sutherland, and as ever, I hope wherever you are in the world listening to this episode, you are in fine spirits. This week, I fly all the way over virtually to Barbados, and my guest is Julie Turney, a human resources manager and talent scout. Now, Julie seeks to mould organisational culture wherever she works into a family-first environment. She's been involved in human resources for 12 years, which is quite a long time. And wherever she goes, she believes that getting to know all of the people and learning their stories is key to being a good HR professional. And to that end, she works tirelessly to ensure that every employee she works with is engaged and motivated through its leadership, because she recognises that the success of the organisation is not only reflected in return on interest, but in the development of the employees. So she sees the future of HR as people-focused, the synergy between upskilling and reskilling employees, while using technology where necessary. She is an incredibly busy lady. She does a lot. She's a specialist in agile HR. She is an official organizer of the Barbados chapter for Disrupt HR, and she's soon to add to the Barbados chapter for Hacking HR. She's also a mom of three and is the true definition of a people champion. And she's a fellow podcaster because she has a podcast show called HR Sound Off. Julie truly believes that if we inculcated the agile mantra, people over process in our daily activities in the workplace and at home, our world would be a better place. So I do hope you enjoy my conversation with Julie this week. It was one full of laughter. A lot of synergies in some of the things we do and some of the work. So before I introduce you to my interview with Julie Turney, I just want to remind you that you can rate, review, subscribe and share the podcast. And if you like what you heard, please leave a review, drop me a message, let me know who you'd love to see on the guest and what your takeaways are. So without further ado, here is our interview. Enjoy. Hey everybody, and welcome to This Woman Can. As I said, I have my guest this week, should I say, hails from Barbados. Though we do have another connection that may not be so obvious straight away, but I'll let Julie Turney share that with you. So Julie, welcome, and thank you for joining me on this week's edition of This Woman Can.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Good. Let's see if that rings true by the end of the interview. So, Julie, I would have done a very brief bio at the top of the program, but really tell us about your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Oh, wow. This could take up the entire podcast. You know that, right? So I am originally from Manchester in UK.
There's the connection. My
father was Jamaican and my mother is Barbadian. So I always joke that I'm a Brit-Bajan. So I'm a bit of a mashup for everything. And I started my journey in HR about 15 years ago, but I originally started my working career in sales and marketing.
Okay.
And I actually used to sell office furniture.
Okay.
And then I went into selling like cash registers and scales and stuff like that. And I quickly realized through my career in sales that I didn't like selling stuff, but I did like trying to learn people and understand people and what made them make purchasing decisions.
Okay.
And so over time, I started to drift away from sales and marketing and I went into administration. And as I got into administration and I started to meet people, one of my managers one day asked me, well, Julie, have you ever thought about being in human resources? And I was like, human resources? Like, no. I know we teach the course. I know the lecturers. I know what the books say because I read them. But I've never actually considered being in HR. I just knew that I like, you know, establishing relationships with people and understanding what makes them tick. And I actually decided, okay, well, let me try going down this rabbit hole and see where it takes me. And 15 years later, here I am, still in HR, still loving what I do, but I've diversified over time. So within the last, say, maybe 2 to 3 years, I've diversified more into agile HR, so trying to specialize in agile HR, becoming certified in that, going towards being a trainer for that course, and just helping people to understand the importance of being able to provide a minimal viable product over time without having to take a long time to bring something to fruition for the organization. And that's what agile is all about, you know, flexibility and speed, as well as making sure that we keep our customers happy and we create great people. And I'm all about that. So that's me to this date. But my journey has taken me down other places. So right now, I am the HR manager for an organization called Hyuna International. But I also am a performance coach for HR executives and HR professionals.
Okay.
And just helping them to lead with purpose. I also am a podcaster like you. So I have my podcast, which is HR Sound Off. And I also am the lead organizer for Disrupt HR in Barbados, Jamaica, and Trinidad. And that's where my journey has ended up. That's where I am today. And just trying to grow and scale what I'm doing right now.
Fabulous. It sounds like you have a lot on your plate. Now, I have known a lot of HR. I have a lot of HR friends. That's probably the same. A lot of HR friends. And what I don't find in HR is very many men in the HR field. What do you think attracts so many women to that particular profession?
So if I go by what the data says or what convention and time has told us, we started HR out of personnel management, and that was just from a basis of having a secretary who took care of the employee information. And so pretty much out of that, it was a female career. So pretty much out of that, over time, it has just evolved into human resources, with it being predominantly a female dominant profession. Right. I actually remember reading somewhere recently a blog that someone wrote where they said that the typical HR professional is pictured as a 40-year-old white woman with 3 kids.
Okay.
And I thought, interesting way to depict HR. But because it is seen as such a touchy-feely, emotional career, emotional role, a lot of women tend to move towards it. You know, a lot of women were seen as, you know, the auntie or the mummy. So it really does drive or tend to lean towards a lot of women. But there are men in HR, not as many as we would like to see. But over time, as the future of work starts to develop and grow, and we start to become more analytical and really understanding what the data that is provided for us in this space and what it really means and interprets into and helps us to make conscious business decisions, we're going to see a lot more men moving towards human resources, even if it's just from the analyst perspective.
Right.
But what I do see is a lot of men who are in HR are usually in the very senior roles and not making much space for the women in HR leadership roles. But when I do see men in HR, they're usually in very senior roles in the organization, leading women. But I do see that over time, more men will come into the profession as it continues to evolve.
Right. Now, I'm veering off track a little bit here because there's just a thought that just came into my mind. Now, statistically, we also know that at a senior level, executive level, it tends to be male.
But
a lot of the, as you say, human driven decisions and things like that, that impact the workforce are handled by HR, which are women. And we know there is always a typically or anecdotally, whichever you want to look at it, there can be some tension between the male executives at that senior level view the HR, mm-hmm. who aka women in that field. Yeah. How does mm-hmm. somebody, a woman, even if they're not in HR, actually tackle that misconception, that perception?
Okay, so from my perspective and a lot of experience that I've had is helping people to draw their own conclusions. And like I said before, for me, a lot of what I've done over the years is help people to come to their own conclusions, because I like to understand what makes people tick. Right. So from a senior level, I would always ask the questions, you know, well, why would you think that is that way? Why do you think it's better for a man to do it as opposed to a woman? Just to hear what the understanding is. Some people may shy away and they go, no, I didn't mean that a man can do it better than a woman. It's just mm-hmm. that this is my preference. Or, and then that's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
That's a whole other conversation. And I think a lot of it over time, and what we're going to start to see happening now, especially as we have all of these movements happening now, is we're going to start to have that D&I conversation as it relates to men and women in leadership. Like a lot of organizations I'm seeing now, especially in the US, are recognizing the importance of having females in leadership roles. Mm. I think last week I saw something where MIT now has a new head, and it's a woman, and she's Black.
Right.
And I don't think it's that people are just ticking boxes, but they're recognizing the need to start making a shift. Mm. And I think one of the things that caused that shift also was that a lot of countries now have female prime ministers.
Yeah.
And if you look at how female prime ministers have handled COVID-19 versus how men have handled COVID-19, I think people are starting to recognize that women in leadership really is not such a bad thing, and they really are looking for the best outcome for everyone, and they're looking at those examples and they're saying, yes, we really need to start making a shift in how we look at leadership in organizations based on these examples.
Fantastic. Great answer. Thank you for that. So let me take you back on track now. Let's make this about you. So Julie, throughout your career, what have been the biggest challenges you've faced, or typically how do you overcome them when you face a challenge?
The biggest challenges I faced very early in my career was getting, having my voice, understanding what my HR voice was and how to use it in an impactful way.
Okay.
So it wasn't just about, yes, I could do this work, or this was what I thought was best for the organization, but understanding how to interpret that in such a way that leadership understood the value of what I was saying.
Right.
And I've had many no's, but I've always overcome hurdles because I believe that, again, from my sales background, you need the no's, because the no's eventually bring you to a yes. And that's one of the benefits of my sales and marketing background, that I appreciate the value of a no.
Yeah.
And it just means that I have to understand that I'm not communicating the best way I could to my customer. And it has helped me to understand the importance of being a more effective communicator to my customer in order to help them to understand where I'm coming from and what I'm saying is really going to add value and benefit. So no's, I live for a no. A no empowers me so much more. Every rejection, every constructive piece of criticism that I've ever received has only made me better. Yes, you may sulk and frown about it for a little mm-hmm. while, but my mother always used to say to me, you will get vexed, but eventually you will get pleased. And it's true. And I kind of live my life that way. Thank my mom for that. I've just kind of lived my life that way. Even if I'm upset about it, eventually I'll come through it and say, you know what, but this, you know, I take this and take it in a constructive way, and it always makes me better.
Great, great. And I come from a sales background myself for many, many, many years, so I totally understand where you're coming from. But the one thing I want to pick up there is that you talked about hearing no, which is great, and knowing how no spurs you on. Let me flip that round a little bit. In HR, everybody, you are the target, the fixer, the person we go to when we want to get something done, which usually blur boundaries. And I know a lot of women who struggle with not just hearing no, but actually saying no. So how do you ensure that your boundaries don't get breached, so you remain in a good headspace, so to speak?
I set expectations very early in my relationships. So I tell people how I work, what my expectations are. I try to understand what their expectations are of me very early. And it's on that basis that I communicate and that I exist in my relationships. So I don't do blurred lines very well. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with gray areas, but when I feel empowered enough to set the expectations, I set the expectations up front very early. Right. I've learned over the years the understanding of being an open communicator, and I think that comes with, I want to say, age and experience. Do you not find this true though, Janice? Like the things that you put up with in your 20s, you don't put up with those now, do you?
Absolutely not. And
exactly.
And I think when you talk about that, is one of the things that spurred me to just walk away from corporate, because I'm like, I've done this. I've served my time. Thank you very much. It's time to do something that makes me happy. So yeah, you're right. At this stage, you're like, I don't want to disrupt the ears of the listening public, but there's a word that comes to mind.
Well, listen, usually I just say to people, like, I'm at this stage now, and I go to people, listen, I am 43 years old. I don't need to put up with this. And this is what my expectation is. Yeah. And I will not stand for X, Y, or Z. Yeah. I know very early in my 20s, I thank God for having friends who were older than me, and that my mother and my grandmother instilled that in me. You should always have friends who are older than you to set you straight. And in my 20s, I have a friend down to this day. She's still my very good friend. And she was always the one, she would say to me, Julie, you say yes too much. You have to learn to say no. But when I was in my 20s, she was in her 40s. I mean, now she's in her 60s, but she's still my very good friend. She's like my sister. And she learned me the importance of the power of no.
Yes.
And she just said to me, Julie, you have to learn to set boundaries. You can't do it all. You have to learn to say no. And down to this day, I thank her for that, because it stuck to me. And I realized that the more I said no, the more people respected the no.
Yes. Yes.
But it's not just no, it's no with an explanation. Yeah. Like, no, I can't do it now, but, or I could make this suggestion, this reference, I can't do it, but I could do it this other time. So it's like, not just no, but it's no with a rational explanation, and understanding that your no gives you power, and that you are empowered to say no.
Absolutely.
As opposed to saying yes all the time, because yes can put you in some serious trouble.
Absolutely. I tell my coaches, you know, when you say yes to something you don't want to do, that's you saying no to something you actually want to do. You know, so you need to make you cannot be everything to everybody, and you need something for yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I can see you could set boundaries with Julie. I can see you're good at setting boundaries.
I'm going to coach people to do it, I have to do it right.
Absolutely. So Julie, if you had to start out from scratch, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently?
Ooh, so many things I would do differently.
Ooh,
are we talking about work? Or are we talking about life in general?
Well,
which hole do you want to go down?
Oh, goodness me. I was going to say one of each, but it depends how deep the holes are.
Okay. So let's go down the work hole first. So in work, what I would do differently is I would have explored being an entrepreneur sooner.
Okay.
And I would have learned the power of marketing on social media sooner, so that the benefits that I'm reaping now, I would have reaped them before, and I would have been able to step out of corporate sooner.
Okay.
So I would have created a better plan of coming out of the corporate space into entrepreneurship.
All right. So how has social media helped in your entrepreneurial journey?
So many ways. Like, because now people have the power of the click.
Right.
And if you market yourself in the right way, and you move people to make that decision to just make that call with you.
Yeah.
Like, if I'd known that up front, the power of getting people to the point where they can just click, schedule a call, and we start a journey, opposed to marketing, just like creating flyers and putting them out there, but not bringing people to a call to action. And I mean, from a sales perspective, you'd think that I'd understand the importance of a call to action. But I mean, I've worn my HR hat for so long that I kind of lost track of, you know, from a sales perspective, what that meant. But bringing people to a call to action now in social media has really been very impactful for me. To get them to that point of one click, I get more calls now than I did when I first started.
But I think it's the power of the ask. And something just struck me what you said there, is that when you're in sales and marketing, you weren't asking for yourself per se, you were asking for your business.
Right.
And it's a very different, different dynamic when it's you, when you are now the product.
Yes.
And you are, you are selling you. So the ask, even though we don't consciously think it, the thought of hearing no, and it's about me personally, and what I bring to the table, is a whole different.
Yes, it's a bruising to the soul. Soul crushing.
So I think that's true. I think it's the power of the ask as opposed to, the social media.
And yes.
Just expanding on that, you talked about not having a plan. Now, I won't tell you about my plan, because I too didn't really have a plan. but what would have having a plan to move into the entrepreneurial space have done for you?
It would have given me a better sense of timing. Because for me, everything is about timing. And it just would have put me in a better space of knowing, you know, as I go through each stage, mentally I tick boxes.
Right.
So in that space of being able to say, okay, yes, I did that either in the time frame that I said I was going to do it, or I did it before, or understanding why I didn't do it at the time that I said I was going to do it. When I'm time bound to stuff, I don't procrastinate at all. So it would have just taken me out of that space.
Okay. We could go down the rabbit hole with that again, but I'm not going to. So starting over from scratch on a personal level, because you touched on work, so we said one of each.
Yes. From a personal level, starting from scratch for me would have been, I always tell people I live my life in reverse. So I got married young, had my children, then developed my career.
Yeah.
Don't regret that so much. But what I would do differently is I wouldn't have gotten married as young as I got married. So like, I got married at 21. I wouldn't do that again.
I can beat you. I can beat you on that, but never mind.
I want to hear this now. This is a two-way conversation, woman. I want to hear that.
I was 19 and then had my first child. I had my first child at 21. Yeah, so
I had my first at 22. What I do love about the fact that I had my children so young, like I had my last child at 29, what I do like about the fact that I had them so young is that we've grown up together, but I still, what the reason why I said that I would have done it a little differently is because I don't think I was able to bring the level of maturity to what they needed and what they deserved at the time. Because I went through a lot of things having children young. I suffer from postpartum depression a lot. Mm-hmm. At least 7 years of my raising my children, I raised them through postpartum depression, which was unfair to them and you know, to my husband as well. Getting married young, my husband and I were able to grow together, but then we've drifted apart as well. Mm-hmm. So I would have started from scratch. I definitely would have still gotten married in my 20s, but not 21. Yeah. I would have waited till I was about maybe 25, 26, because I still would have wanted to have my first child in my 20s while I could still snap back.
That's a thing. But
it is a thing. Ask Beyonce.
Oh my goodness. So we're talking about age here and stuff like that, as you said, and having family mm-hmm. early on. So what advice would you share with any women, young women embarking on their own leadership journey or entering into a new profession, a male dominated profession?
Where would I begin? Understand the profession that you're going in. So research is everything. Mm-hmm. And your understanding your key stakeholders is key. And developing relationships with your key stakeholders very early on is very important. And even though you're going to be working with other people, knowing your key stakeholders is the foundation, and having a good relationship with them is a foundation that is irreplaceable. So those one-on-one relationships that maybe other people might restrict you from doing, don't take the restrictions. Cross the boundary and, you know, establish those relationships as early as possible. One thing I learned in HR is the importance of having a good relationship with my CEO. Mm. And that's something that you have to fight very hard to create and understand, because you have other people who are reporting into him as well, whether it be CFO or marketing lead or, you know, different VPs, whatever the case may be. But even if you're in the HR space or a leader, any leadership space, develop that relationship as early as possible with your CEO. That one-on-one relationship, no one can replace. I feel like that is a fundamental ground rule going into a leadership role. Do your research. Establish your relationship with your CEO that's personal to you and nobody else as very early as possible. And set your ground rules and your expectations, what you will stand for, what you won't stand for, how far you're willing to go in a gray area and where you're not willing to go in a gray area. Because then, you know, these things help them to understand who you are as a person. An interview doesn't cover everything. Mm. So having one-on-one conversations after that is very important. Like something I've always done in organizations that I'm with leadership is I always do like a coffee morning where I'll put something in the calendar and just take them for coffee, and I'll go, it's, you know, your time on my dime, 30 minutes, whether you drink coffee or not, if you just want tea or juice or whatever, but we're going to take that time to catch up, talk, me learn a little bit about you, you learn a little bit about me, and we talk business in between. But that relationship with my CEO is very, very important to me.
Excellent. I'm going to give you a little virtual stab a little bit though, because I take exception, because you said the CEO, you said him, and I'm like,
well,
girl, I have,
you know what I mean, you know what I mean, him or her. I am all for diversity and inclusion. I am all about it, all over it.
You're in HR, you better be.
Absolutely.
So absolutely. You gave a very good strategy there about the coffee and stuff like that. And for me, that comes from a place from an individual who's very confident in what they bring to the table, who they are. I don't think that everybody listening to this is that confident. It's mm-hmm. definitely something I would do, because I know exactly, I'm setting it straight from the get-go. Like you say, maybe it comes with a certain level of age and experience. I don't know, but however, I'm too old to be taking any ish. So let me set my boundaries straight away. So what advice would you give maybe someone who's just maybe gone into their maybe their first maybe senior leadership role and having to tackle the CEO, male or female, and wanted to build that stakeholder network? What advice would you build them about being confident and being able to confidently do that?
This is going to sound weird, right? But I'm an introvert mainly. And with being an introvert, one of the things I do is I observe people.
Right.
I'm not saying stalk your leadership, but observe them, like observe what drives them, whether it's that you're sitting in a meeting. What I used to do is I used to make notes of things that I observed of my leadership team, whether it be from a meeting. Mm-hmm. I had a journal that I kept with different people's names, and I had something that told me like, okay, Mary likes coffee. Mary doesn't like to start meetings late. Yeah. So that taught me I need to get to meetings on time. So it's kind of like understanding your people, you know? John loves flowers, hates coffee. So then I knew I couldn't take John for a coffee, but I could take him for a juice. Yeah. Or John likes squash. So let's talk about squash.
Yeah.
One of the things that I always try to establish very early in my relationships with people like football and want to know what football team they support. Because if they don't support Man U, we're instant enemies.
Ugh,
and
I think we should end the interview here. But anyway.
But it always leads and spurs the good conversation, especially if they're football fans. Because you could talk about football through the ages, football now. You know, people always bash my team and I take it in stride because I know who we were before. Mm-hmm. And I know that I can uprightly say, yes, I know they're doing foolishness now. You know, I love to have conversations. Right now, like the organization that I'm with, you guys love football. And they all have their own fantasy football league. And it's like understanding their team. Yeah. So it's kind of like you're building strategy underground.
Yeah.
You're secretly, not secretly, but, you know, subliminally, you're there trying to understand these people so that you can have conversations that make sense. What are they passionate about?
Yeah.
What do they talk about most? You know, try to understand their family life. I mean, one of the things that COVID has helped us to do is because we have Zoom meetings now, we can see right into people's homes and understand who, get a sense of who they are. Like, I'm looking at the books behind you right now, and I have been from the beginning of the call. I see some trophies on your shelf, and that's a whole conversation that we could have. So, you know, like if we were going to have a whole separate conversation, I'd be like, what was your story with Sex and the City?
Yeah.
You know, and those kind of things. So it's like you're secretly building your own personal log of who these people are, so that when you get into spaces to finally have conversations with them, you can bring that journal out and then have these conversations and bring these things to mind.
And you just reminded me of something I used to say. Whilst I didn't have a hit journal on everybody, that's a step for me. I did used to go in every meeting. If you looked at, I religiously carried a notebook for years, every meeting. And this notebook would take every meeting. People used to say, oh my gosh, here's Janice with her black book. Because it was always the same. Uh-huh. I just changed it, just put a new insert in. I'd start the year. Put the start of the year, whatever the book started with, and it'd go through me everywhere I went. And every meeting, at the top of the page, as people are talking, I'd jot a note. I'd put a little pointer, what I picked up on, what did I notice, that kind of stuff. And that I could always refer back to, like you said, we didn't have another conversation or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Even if it wasn't going to be a stakeholder, if it's somebody I need to get on side for a particular project, I could pick up on something they said or just dig a bit deeper. So totally, I'm totally with you on that.
Yes.
So Julie, share with us a success quote or a mantra that you use and why it's meaningful to you.
My mantra is the comeback is stronger than the setback.
Okay.
And I love it because I can't remember where I got it from. I just know I've had it for a long time. no matter whether it's your personal life or your professional life, you're always going to have setbacks. And it goes beyond the no. It's, you know, things like depression and mental health is real, is a serious thing, and it's a very real thing. And just knowing that despite that setback, you can come back. Right. And your comeback can be stronger than your setback.
Yeah,
I could be down for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 4 months, 4 years. But the point is, I'm going to rise above that at some point in time. There's a point in time in my life where I'm going to say to myself, snap out of this and look at the positive things that are in your life. And then, you know, let's start the journey in getting back to where we were, if not better. And I always try to rise above. So the comeback is stronger than the setback. That's, right. that's my jam.
Fantastic. All day long. It's all about resiliency. All about resiliency. So you talked about getting married young at 21, etc., and you know the ups and downs of that. So what advice would you give to your teenage self?
Okay. This one's a little hard for me. But number one, I would say, yes, definitely don't get married young. When you see red flags, don't try to think that they may be purple flags or they have the potential to become green flags. They are red flags.
Yeah.
Accept that they are red flags.
Yeah.
And I would also tell my younger self, you can't fix people that don't want to be fixed.
Yes.
And that's a very big one for me. I saw lots of red flags in my relationship that I chose to ignore. And I went into a relationship thinking that the red flags that I saw I could help fix. No, the only person you can fix is yourself. The only person you can develop and grow is yourself. If you are a spiritual person like I am, I would have told myself, my younger self, trust God when he shows you stuff. Trust that he's shown it to you for a good reason. And don't feel that because you love someone that you have to be with this person. You don't know who God is going to send down the road. But that's the stage that I'm at in my life right now, where there was a time when I may have been afraid to be alone, but I'm not now. And I mean, technically I have three children. I'll never be alone. But I'm at a stage now where I'm okay with being in my own skin and being on my own.
And I think you're right, because I mean we'll probably talk off air on this, because there's very similarities to your journey and mine. I see a lot of what you're saying in me. And also around that time I got to 40, where I said, you know, I don't need to kiss any more frogs. I really don't. You know, I'm comfortable with who I am, you know, and if this is how it has to be, this is how it has to be. But I'm very happy what I've got. Thank you very much.
And absolutely.
Once I adopted that mindset, things changed. A lot of things changed.
So freeing.
I then met my second husband out of the blue, you know, and 16 years later, we're still together, you know. So but it was the fact that I'd accepted, I'm enough.
Yes.
I am enough. You know, so I think you're right. There's a, liberating.
Very, very indeed.
So if you could choose your own mentor, Julie, who would it be and why?
If I could choose a mentor for me, it would be Beyonce.
Okay. Now, all right. Okay. All the single ladies and everything. Now, you know.
So there are lots of reasons why I would choose Beyonce if I could get close to her.
Okay.
I think Beyonce has an amazing work ethic. The effort that she puts into creating a show, and the fact that she does it all herself with a team. Now, from a D&I perspective, I would say she needs some more men in there, but I understand why she went with an all-female band.
Yeah.
And I give her props for that. But just her whole, she's more than just Beyonce the singer.
Yeah.
She's Beyonce the mother. She's Beyonce the business mogul. And she is an actress. And she's done all of these amazing things and kept it all in stride. And I just love to get 30 minutes in her head to know like what her thought process is as she goes into things. And the other thing that I really love about Beyonce is her ability to present the same song different ways every time. So, and I always say when it comes to public speaking, like whenever I do have a speaking engagement, while I may be talking on the same topic, I never like to present it the same way. And I always think about her ethic, her work ethic of how you present information so that even if the same person has to hear you talk about the same thing, they would still want to hear it because they don't know how you're coming at it this time. And that's what I aspire to when it comes to public speaking. I want people to know me as the person who talks about agile HR, but I don't talk about it the same way every single time. Like you understand what it is, but if you're going to hear me bring an illustration about what agile HR is or is not, then you're going to hear me talk about it differently every time. And for me, that's crucial that I don't come across as samey every time you hear me, but you know what I am and you know what I stand for.
I hear Beyonce and I hear what you say, and I'm trying to phrase this question the right way. Do you think, now I can see all the positives like you said and stuff like that, and I'm probably harking back to the superwoman image. Do you think she'll be able to do everything she does without the fact she has a whole team that help her?
She has a team, absolutely. And understanding how that team works is what helps you to aspire to want to be a good leader, right? So understanding like how she puts all of that stuff together, like even as I watched her last video, it was Homecoming. You saw how she worked with her team.
Yeah.
You saw how she worked with her team. That whole, her whole work ethic is not just that on her own, but she has a whole team. And it's understanding how those people, you know, bring what she puts in, what is in her head to fruition. And as women in leadership, that's what every woman should aspire to. Having a team of people around them who are able to bring what you want to fruition. So understanding your vision and what you have for where you want to go and how you want to develop this in the future, you need to have a team that is willing to be with you ride or die right through. And all of that, I just love to get in their head and talk about, you know, how do you treat your people?
Yeah.
What are some of the key things for you as a leader that you found necessary in order to bring out the best in your people?
Yeah.
Whenever you see her on the stage, her team always bring, the band brings their A game. The people who put the stage together, A game. You know, those fans are always on point.
Yeah. and let me just add to that for listeners, because again, yes, she has a team. She's very successful. But if I kind of go back, well, both of us will probably have this situation where we were working mothers. You know, maybe single at the time as well. You know, I certainly went back to school as a mature student, were raising children and working full time. Your team, absolutely. Your team doesn't just have to be at work. You know, my mother was instrumental in helping me, looking after the kids and stuff like that, so I could go to school and I'd have different network of friends I could count on. Yeah. So your team, for those ladies listening,
all those people
doesn't have to be at work. It's all those people around you.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. Like, I don't know what I would do without my mother. Or at the time, like when my children were younger, like my mother-in-law, she played a very integral role in helping with the children after school.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law, my husband played his part too, you know? So like everyone played their part. And like I said, my ride or die friend who I've had down to this day, when my children were little, like if they had to go to a fair or something, like she was always the one to be there to like help me, you know, get the kids to where they needed to go and whatever needed to be done. She was very supportive in that. So your team can be anyone from anywhere, like, but you understand the difference between your work team and then your personal team, and what each person brings and how much you value what they bring, and then showing how much you appreciate the value that they brought to your life is very important. Yeah. Fabulous. But I agree with you 100%.
Fabulous. Fabulous. So Julie, we're coming down to the last few questions here.
Okay.
What are the three things that you've learned about yourself during your career?
I've learned about myself during my career. I can't do it all.
Okay.
Even as much as I would like to, I can't do it all. always ask for help and never be afraid to say, I don't know.
Yes.
And those three things have been very important, have really helped me to grow. You know how many times I hear people say, even now, not my team, because I've set that expectation, but like I hear people say, you know, you ask them a question and they go, yeah, I know. So what do you know? Then they don't know. Then you realize quickly they don't know. And I always say, don't be afraid to say you don't know. Yeah. I more admire the fact that you don't know. And if you say, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm willing to go and research it, find it out, I value that more than a yes, you know, when you know you don't know.
Absolutely. And I said that's the biggest strength is actually asking for help when you need it. You know, it's the biggest sign of strength. It's the only way you're going to grow. You can sit there floundering, trying to work out the answer for like how long. No. You've wasted that time. You could have just asked somebody who's actually in the field.
You could have asked for help. Oh yes, that and if the instruction that's given to me isn't clear, going back and getting clarification.
Yeah.
So many times in my career, very early in my career, I took down instructions, and then when I got back to my desk, it's like I have no clue and I don't know how to go back and say I don't know.
Oh gosh.
Now I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
But when I was younger, that was a problem for me. So wow. That was an interesting therapy session.
We're almost there. Where would we find you on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m. typically?
Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, you'll find me in the supermarket with my mom.
Okay.
We will be in this. We go to the market very early.
Yes.
Get that out of the way.
Yeah. Excellent.
We can have a nice day after that. Oh, yes.
Fantastic.
Supermarket.
And lastly, what does success feel like to you?
Success feels like riding a roller coaster. You know, when you hit that, when you get to the highest part of the roller coaster, you know it's going to go down. You know your stomach is going to sink. You're going to get that sick feeling. Because in order to be successful, you have to be, there's a measure of fear that comes with success. Mm. But it's doing it afraid and doing it anyway. Doing it anyway, that's what success feels like to me. Just before you get that dip from the roller coaster, from going up, that dip down. Yeah, because then I know that I've gotten to the point where that roller coaster ride is almost over. Anyone who knows me knows I hate roller coasters.
Same here.
But I'll do it just to get over the fear of it, but I hate them every time.
I love that answer. I've not had the roller coaster answer before, but I totally understand what you're saying. Understand it. So Julie, that was my last interview question, but if listeners would like to connect with you, would like to hear more about what you're saying, how can they do that?
So I am on all social media platforms as I am Julie Turney. So IAM, Julie Turney, all one word, every social media platform you'll find me on with that. My podcast is HR Sound Off, and you'll find that on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook. Yes.
Excellent. I'll be sure to put all the connections in the show notes as well. So, Julie, sure. Thank you so much for being my guest this week. I have loved that conversation.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
I'm sure we could have made it longer because I avoided a few rabbit holes. But yes, I love the conversation. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
You can hear I had great fun with that interview this week, with interviewing Julie, and we have continued with the relationship offline. So, it was a really great connection. And there's a few things I took away from that, as ever, you know me, is actually appreciating the value of no and the setting of boundaries. You know I'm huge on creating boundaries, making sure you're able to say no constructively. And the other thing she said was about having listening to feedback, especially constructive feedback. Don't deny yourself that opportunity to learn more about where you need to develop the areas you could explore, and you know how you can elevate yourself in whatever you do, especially when it's career related. And my last takeaway from that was relationships with key stakeholders. And that's core. We normally think about just our boss being a stakeholder, but there are a lot of people who can influence our success at work. And it's about knowing who those people are, creating that valuable relationship with them so that they can help you succeed as well as you help them. Now, in the Purpose, Power and Presence Women's Leadership Program, these are some of the things we actually touch on that helps you in your career. We're talking about leveraging your personal brand, that so you can position yourself as a credible leader, developing the skills to ascend the corporate ladder, taking on greater leadership responsibilities, building that wide and strategic network of key stakeholders that Julie talked about, who will help promote your career. And overall, becoming a more confident, assertive woman in a very competitive world. So opening is that registration is open for the program. You just need to head over to janicesutherland.com, look for Purpose, Power and Presence. Book some time with me to discuss how the program can help you elevate your career. See how it can help you teach you the strategies on how to improve the area of life and business and the relationships that are important to you. So as I said, head over to www.janicesutherland.com for more information. Can't wait to talk to you. As ever, that's the end of the program. Wherever you are, remember, if I can, you can, this woman can. Take care until next time.
Hi, it's Janice. Thanks for being a supporter of the podcast. But have you joined the This Woman Can community online? It's where ambitious women can share experiences, strategies, and insights that equip and inspire them to build their career success, maximize their leadership, and make an impact in their world. And it's free. Join today. Visit www.thiswomancan.coach. Look forward to meeting you there.